The eagle has landed.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
I consider myself the luckiest man.
I have a dream today.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History, the podcast that has a focus on education, technology, and history. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri. That's a suburb just outside of Kansas City. And you're listening to podcast episode number 117, being recorded on the evening of September 9th, 2007. Well, we are in our about fourth or fifth week, kind of depends if you count that first week as a full week. It's actually 2 days, so I guess I consider it as a week. So this next Monday will actually be our fifth week in class, and we are now into the heart of our Unit 1 studies. We're talking about the things that led up to the American Revolution. But I wanted to go back just a little bit and talk about some of the things that we do at the beginning of the school year. One thing that I want to kind of focus on a little bit this year is talk a little bit progressively as we go through our units and some of the projects we do, because for the most part, that's where I get a lot of the email from teachers or people that are interested in what's happening in class. They'll ask specific questions about projects and how we do different things. And so I wanted to kind of try and do almost like a podcast journal as we go through the year and talk about some of those projects and particular resources and links and things like that that we use in class. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about what we do typically in the first week of class. Now, over the last 14 years, obviously this has changed and kind of been adapted and adjusted a little bit. But for the most part, most of these activities are things that I've done for at least the last 3 years or so, and feel pretty comfortable with the way that we use them to start the year. We don't jump right into our curriculum. Our 8th grade curriculum goes from the beginning of the American Revolution, basically like the causes of the Revolutionary War, and goes all the way through about 1900. But the first week or so, we do a couple other activities to kind of set the mood a little bit for the rest of the school year. And I think that it's important to get into the content quickly, but I also like to kind of step back a little bit and give the students some background and a little bit of an understanding of why we're going to do some of the things that we do during the rest of the year. So one of the first things I have my students do is I have them fill out an information sheet. And I used to do this so that I could just find out a little bit about, you know, what their hobbies were, what they like to do. I typically put a question on there now that I really enjoy that says, okay, if you could invite three people to dinner, who would you invite to dinner, living or dead? Three people living or dead, who would you invite to dinner? And I tell them you can't invite, like, you know, Homer Simpson or, you know, some fictional character like that. And that's pretty interesting. Usually find out a lot just from that one question about what students are thinking, what they like to do. I also ask them, if you could have any job in the world for a living or for a career, what would you do? And I think that gives a lot of insight, too, as to what they really enjoy doing. And I ask questions about, like, what kind of movies do they like? What kind of books do they like? Because then as I get to learn a little bit more about them, I can kind of, you know, maybe have some of those connections with specific things that the students like. And I'm always surprised at some of the answers that they have. You know, as you're building a rapport with your students and you find out that, you know, somebody might listen to the same type of music that you do, or they like a certain type of TV show or movie, you can kind of use that to kind of build a little bit on the relationship. Now, I used to have them write this out on a piece of paper and then turn it into me. The only bad thing there being, you know, sometimes you just can't read their handwriting, or, you know, maybe they're a little bit sloppy. So I have them create this on a piece of paper that they take home, and they have overnight to do it, so they're not rushed in class. And then when they come back, we actually go to the computer lab, and I've got a PowerPoint slide that they can actually go in, and it's a template, and they type in all their information and then save it, and then they turn it into me as a digital copy. So when I do go to print that off, it's a clean copy. I can read it because it's digital, it's typed, and I don't have to guess on, you know, what they put down as their address, or, you know, what they put down as, you know, the title of a book or something like that. So we do that very early so I can get to know a little bit about them. I also take a snapshot real quick of them so that I can start to learn names. I'm absolutely horrible with names, and so I really struggle with that throughout the year. I try and make little flashcards for myself so that I can memorize their names, and so that as they're walking down the hall, I can say hi and address them with their name, and so that I'm not just, you know, constantly saying, you know, hey, you know, can you come in and you know, talk to me about this in class or things like that. So that's one of the first things we do. Another thing that we do very early on is a learning style survey. And I used to use an actual paper test, and there's a bunch of these out there. I mean, there's some that you can actually pay for. There's some that are free. I used to have one that was a series of about 50 questions, and students would answer it, and then there was a way that you could, like, total up how many yes answers or no answers. So we did that for a couple years, but now we use an online one, and it's one that has, this site has a little bit of advertising on it, but it's really not to the point where I think it's super distracting or anything, but it has a little bit of advertising on it. But this is an online, basically like a test that the students answer to specific things like, do you enjoy, would you rather enjoy hearing a lecture or reading a book? Do you like listening to a lecture more than you like reading a book? And then you have to answer if that applies to you seldom, never, or often. And then they go through about 30 of these. And then when you hit submit, the computer tells you basically what your primary learning style is, whether you're an auditory learner, whether you are a visual learner, or a kinesthetic learner. And the students, what I do is I give them a sheet beforehand, and we talk about the three different types of learning styles, and then they fill out basically which one they think their primary learning style is. And then they take the survey, and then they mark down what they actually are. And the site that we're currently using and the one that I have is the link on the webpage. It actually tells you if you happen to be tied in two of them. And I actually had one student this year that was tied for all three of them. So it tells you what your primary mode of learning is. But then the other neat thing is there's actually a link where you click on that, and it gives you probably about a dozen suggestions for that learning style on how you can incorporate that specific learning style into what you're studying for. So if you're studying for a test, for example, you know, kinesthetic learners, it says it might actually help you out if you're up walking around the room and, you know, maybe you're looking at flashcards and you're actually walking around while you're looking at flashcards. Or maybe it's going to be best for you if you study for about 10 minutes, take a 2 or 3 minute break, and then come back and study intently for, you know, 10 minutes or so. So what I do on this worksheet is I have my students then fill out 4 different tips that they see on this website that pertain to their specific learning style, so that they kind of, you know, are registering a little bit, hey, this might be a new technique that I can use as I study for class. And I tell them, it's not just for my class. You know, if you're primarily an auditory learner, you're not going to just be an auditory learner in my class. It's going to be your learning style for all of your classes. But it gives them really good suggestions, and the students then write that down, then they turn that in, and then I have that as a piece of paper, this kind of a documented, you know, self-reflection sheet on how they think they learn best, how possibly they do learn best, and then some suggestions. When we do parent-teacher conferences, we have a file folder, and it's basically an artifact collection of different things that are happening in class. One of the parent-teacher conferences we do is actually student-led, so they pull out different things and show their parents how they're doing in class and actual examples of what's happening. So this is one of the artifacts in their file folder. So when they pull that out, you know, one of the discussions they can have with their parents is, you know, I'm primarily an auditory learner. These are some suggestions, so that later on in the year, if a student is struggling with maybe preparing for tests or doing the proper homework, you know, that's one thing we can go back to and say, hey, these are 4 suggestions that you wrote down back in August. You know, maybe you could try one or two of these the next time we study for a unit test and see if it makes a difference. So the link is on the show notes for the Learning Styles survey, and my students enjoy it. And it just kind of gets students talking and thinking a little bit about how they learn differently and how we're going to try and do things in this class period or this class where we don't try and focus on just one learning style. We're going to try and give you notes, both me talking as far as a lecture type style for the auditory learners. We're also going to do a lot of hands-on things with different projects. And we're also going to have the PowerPoint notes and some little video clips and things that really help the visual learner. So it just gets them thinking a little bit about their learning style. Another thing we do early on in the year is an activity called Lost on the Moon. And I originally saw this activity first in a History Alive book. I have actually found it also online. It looks like somebody may have just taken it from that source. I'm not sure, but I have included that link online so you can check it out. And it's basically an activity that tries to reinforce the idea of teamwork and what students should be doing when they get into a group in the future for the rest of the year and work on a specific project for class. So basically, it's the story of a spaceship has crash-landed on the moon. And you are, you know, away from the mothership. You have to get to the mothership. And there's 15 items. You have to rank them according to what's the most important item and what the least important item is. And the students have these items listed on a worksheet. And then what they have to do is rank them individually without talking to anybody. So they get about 4 minutes. It's completely silent. I can't answer any questions about what specific items are. And it's things like a book of matches, an inflatable raft, vitamins, parachute silk. It's just a whole bunch of different things that might actually be on a spaceship. So they do it individually. And then I say, okay, I'm going to break you guys into groups of four, or you can pick whatever number you like. I usually go about four or so. And I say, now I'm going to put you in a group, and you have to come to a consensus in your group on where you think these items rank. It may or may not be the same as what you did, but I want you to talk with your teammates. I want you to bring up any ideas or, you know, any kind of concepts that you might have. Voice those so that everybody can then talk about it and discuss it. And then your group is going to rank them separately in another column. And then I go through and I have a PowerPoint that I created that gives NASA's ranking from 1 through 15. They gave the same list to actual NASA experts and said, okay, rank these items in importance from 1 to 15 if you were stranded on the moon. And so there's a third column where the students have NASA's rank. And what they then do is they compare how close they were as individuals and how close they were as a team to what NASA had. So for example, if for a particular item, you had a number one down and your group had a number three down and NASA said that it was actually number five, then you're going to take your individual one and you're going to find the difference between one and five is four. And then the difference between your team, which I believe I said was three and five, the difference is two. And so the object is to see if you came closer as a team than if you did as an individual. And most times, I'd say probably 75-80% of the time, what the students find out is that as a team, they did much better than they did as individuals. And so then we talk about, well, why is that? The students talk about, hey, you know, I never thought of this particular thing being used for, you know, what Johnny said, and Johnny had a great idea, and then our entire team talked about it and agreed with that idea. And then sometimes we have students that did a lot better as an individual, and then they didn't do as well when they got into a team, you know, and for that I say, hey, you know, if you guys really think that you're, you know, confident in your answers, make sure that when you get in a group situation that you, you know, voice your opinions and your ideas. And sometimes the entire group will embrace that and sometimes they won't. But if you have somebody that did a lot better as an individual than as a team, then that might be the situation that they're in. So like I said, I got this from a book called History Alive. I'm sure many of you that listening are actually familiar with that. But there is also a website and I've included that link. And it's just kind of a fun activity. It gets students thinking. It gets them thinking about groups. And it's just kind of a way to kind of set the tone for, hey, when we get into a group, make sure that every single person in that group is going to be a part of the end result of what you actually produce. All right, another thing that we do that you can do at any time of the year, but we actually do it at the beginning, is a peanut butter and jelly archaeology project. And I've done this for probably about 6 or 7 years. I got it from a national park site. I believe it's actually affiliated with one of the Hopewell culture sites in Ohio. But basically what your classes do is create a three-layer bread, peanut butter, and jelly sandwich that then it has a story that goes with it. You're actually building basically the first layer of bread is a archaic period. You have a campfire where you take raisins, you put the raisins down, and then you put little chocolate sprinkles on the inside, and then floods happen, and so you've got, you know, distribution and different things moving with types of jelly, and it's called the Peanut Butter and Jelly Archaeology Project, but I have not actually used peanut butter for about the last 3 or 4 years. I'm sure that, you know, in many of your schools, you have the same situations with students that have peanut allergies. So what I've done is I've basically substituted, once you see the list there, you'll see the materials you need to do this activity in class. but I've basically substituted one of the peanut butter layers for a second type of jelly. So, for example, I use a grape jelly, and then I also use a strawberry jelly. So as the story goes on, basically you have these different things happening, where on the first piece of bread you have the archaic campfire, and then eventually distribution happens, flood happens, erosion happens. You put another piece of paper or another piece of bread over the top, and then you get to the Hopewell culture, where you basically have these little cutouts that include a cash pit, and you take little broken up pieces of M&M and you put that inside to demonstrate broken up pieces of pottery. You also have little post holes dug for where they had their structures that they lived in. And then eventually what your students do is they take a little like plastic knife and they actually do an excavation on that. And it's a great way to talk a little bit about stratigraphy. If you have different historic sites that actually sit on top of each other, how do you tell what's important? And one of the things that I really try and stress at the end of this activity is, okay, we've talked about, archaeology and how archaeology is not just about stuff. It's not just about the actual item. Because, if you had all these items that were on this archaeological site, you wouldn't have the information, you wouldn't have as much information about how they lived, what their structures looked like, if you just had the stuff without all the information that goes along with it. And then I actually tell them, okay, so we've got this archaeological site. What if we stick it in a blender? And then I typically do this for one class. I bring a blender and actually put it in the blender and put a little bit of water in and chop it all up. And then ask them at the end, okay, are all the archaeological items still in here? Are all the artifacts still in here? And they say, yes, okay. But do we have as much information about where they were and how we can tell how these people lived? And of course, the answer is no, because they're all just blended up and we don't have the information about how far away the post holes were that's going to tell us how big the structure was and things like that. So it's a fun activity. Basically what I do is I go to the store and I get a little bit of jelly and a little bit of jam, and you have to get some M&Ms and you have to what I do is I put them in a baggie and I smash them with a hammer so that we have broken up pieces of M&Ms. We have a little bit of chocolate sprinkles. We have some raisins. And then what I do for the bread is I go to our, we have like a bread outlet store. And I basically, if I talk to them a couple days in advance, what they'll do for me is they'll actually keep the bread that once it becomes expired, they basically, I think they feed it to somebody that has like a pig farm or something. They just give it away in that manner. But what I do is I let them know ahead of time if I think about it in time. And if not, then I just take the lowest price loaves of bread that they have, which if it's an outlet store and they're like a day or two away from expiration, it's pretty cheap. I mean, it's a fraction of what it costs when you actually buy it in the store. And then what I do in my classroom is we do the archaeological dig and we don't actually have the students eat the sandwiches. If you're doing this at home or you're doing this as an individual, maybe each person had their own archaeological site that they're doing on this project, then maybe they could eat it. But what I find is I pair them up so that I have two students working on one archaeological site or one sandwich. And by the time they get done doing the dig and stuff, since they've both kind of touched it and handled it, they don't really want to eat it. So I know sometimes it seems like it's wasteful, but again, basically what I'm wasting is a little bit of jam and a little bit of, broken up M&Ms. Because the bread is basically at the point of where it's going to expire and be thrown away anyway, unfortunately. So that's kind of how I do that project in class. And, it kind of gives the students an example of, hey, we're going to do some hands-on things in class. We're going to do some things that are fun. But we're also, at the end of the day, going to find out, a lot about stratigraphy and, the importance of recording where artifacts are and not just digging up the artifacts and putting them in museums and things like that. So those are a couple of the activities that I do to start off the year. There are links on the show notes that show you where to get information about each of those things. You can find all the instructions and how you can do your own peanut butter and jelly archaeological dig. You can find the things for the Lost on the Moon activity. You can also find the link for the Learning Style Survey. And I do these activities at the start of the year. But for example, the Learning Style Survey, you could really do that any time of year. If you have a day when you can kind of get in the lab and have your students go online and take this, it doesn't take very long. I mean, it probably takes, 20 minutes or so. And students find out a lot about themselves. They start thinking about the learning process and how they learn. And you could do that at any time of the year. Likewise with the archaeology peanut butter sandwich project, you could do that anytime. And the Lost on the Moon thing would also be good. You know, anytime you have a little bit of time, you might want to get a point across about working in groups and what it really means. So that's a little bit of what we do. If you have a suggestion on something that you do at the start of the year, I would love to hear it. You can email me at speakingofhistory@gmail.com, or if you're on the website, which is www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, you can also leave a comment there. But as we all kind of go back to school and kind of get back in the flow, it'd be kind of neat to kind of learn a little bit about what other people are doing across the country. And I'm sure there are some amazing ideas about how we get students excited about history and excited about what's happening in our classroom. And I would love for you to share it here at the Speaking of History side. So that's going to wrap it up for tonight. It's a late Sunday night, so I'm going to get ready for bed and get ready for the new week. Likewise, I hope you have a great week next week. We are doing quite a few things in our classroom, and I'd like to share those with you this year, and I'd like to find out what you're doing as well. So I hope we'll talk again soon, and thanks for listening. Good night. The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.